All right, welcome to the One Speed MMA podcast with yours truly, Flying Smitty,
Carson Wood.
And here on the screen, who do we got? Introduce yourself.
I'm Daniel Levy from Half the Battle and at Best Fight Picks on Twitter. Thanks so much for having me on the show, guys.
Thanks for coming.
You're the first simulcast. I don't know if that's actually a simulcast, but first guest on the monitor.
First guest on the Jumbotron, we decided to call it, Carson.
Excuse me.
It's the Jumbotron.
Excuse me.
So, Daniel, Half the Battle, I really enjoy it. You do a lot of fight picks. You're always talking about gambling. We're going to get that into a lot of that because here in Utah, gambling's actually illegal.
Still happens
everywhere. Wendover is about an hour away, so
well, it happens
whenever we
here.
Have to gamble, we just drive an hour. All of our friends have bookies. You know, we keep it as 100 as possible here, mm-hmm. I guess. So there's a lot of different questions that I would like to get into with betting and different things like that. A lot of people that have been betting have been doing it for a really long time, so it's very hard or difficult to figure out, like, okay, I'm just getting into this. Where's the best place to go? What do these numbers mean and all that kind of stuff? And we'd really like to get into that. But first, I asked you two quick questions on Twitter when we were discussing. One, what was the first MMA fight you ever saw? And two, what was your favorite fight?
Well, the first MMA fight I ever saw, you know, it's tough to say because I would come home and, you know, watch Pride or watch the UFC and I'd be like, wow, this is the best sport in the world. And I didn't know anyone's name at the time. I just knew that I liked the sport. Mm-hmm. But the first time I really got into a fight was Rampage versus Chuck Liddell. And I can remember Rampage in that pre-fight buildup. He's like, I'm going to whoop Chuck's ass. And I can't ever forget that. And then, obviously, I'm from Atlanta, Georgia. So, UFC 88 with Chuck and Rashad, that happened in my hometown. So, that was the first pay-per-view I ever bought.
Very cool. And so, have you been to any UFC events?
Oh, yeah. I've been to many. 145 with Jones and Rashad. Ooh. 162 with Weidman and Silva. Recently at 199 with Bisping and Rockle. And Frankie versus Gray, the trilogy. I've been to a few, my man.
That's awesome.
Oh, the Frankie versus Gray one. I will. If you listen to the podcast, you know that's my all-time favorite trilogy in any combat sport. I'm pretty jealous on that one.
We have a
dude. If you watch the replay when Frankie knocks out Gray, and you pause it real quick, you can see me there. I'm the dude that's lifting up that poster and celebrating. If you pause it on Fight Pass, you'll see me there.
That's awesome. Do you have? Why haven't you screenshotted it yet?
I know, right? I totally need to. I mean, are UFC Fight Pass going to give me shit for doing that or what?
No. Just, what is it? Eric Winter, whatever his name is, just send him a picture of yourself and say, hey, I'm posting this everywhere, and he should be fine with it. It's free advertising for Fight Pass. That's all they want.
Yeah, and he's a cool guy, so I'm sure he'll understand.
Yeah, he's doing customer service. He's the only, like, VP of whatever that's doing customer service on Twitter. People complain, and he actually answers them back, which is unheard of. Gah, super unheard of. Anyway. Did you see the Bellator card?
No.
Daniel, did you see the Bellator card?
Unfortunately, you know, I'm trying to wipe it from my memory, but I did see it.
I kind of swore off Bellator after the Dada Kimbo one, man. And
rightfully so.
Yes.
It's funny because at the time I actually said that I wasn't going to. I'm like, hey, if they have a platform for it, let's do it. But no, I couldn't bring myself to do it. And I think I don't know what I was doing.
Since you're not plugged in and it's not going to come in through your sound, look up Rampage's fight. Daniel, how bad did Rampage look in this fight physically? I mean, obviously, he's an athlete, and he did just fine. He came in and did his job poorly. But physically, did you think he even looked like Rampage?
Well, I mean, obviously, he's an aging competitor, and I got a lot of respect for the guy. But what I really had a problem with was the judge that scored at 30-27 Rampage, because, look, it wasn't 30-27 Rampage, okay, guys? Like, look, 29-28 Rampage, okay, I can live with it. It's Bellator. I get it. You want your guy to win, even though I scored it for Ishii. But 30-27 was ludicrous.
Oh, no, yeah. The fact that the Bellator announcer was like, someone gave all three rounds to Rampage. It was like, oh, my goodness. This is as
bad
as freaking the Fedor fight.
I couldn't believe that Jimmy Smith was scoring that fight for Rampage on his own scorecard. I mean, obviously, I can believe it because, you know, Bellator wants, you know, their guy to win. But still, man, like, I was like, Jimmy, don't lie to me, bro. Don't bullshit me right now. You know what I'm saying?
Speaking of that, how about Matt Mitrione getting some love from the ref after getting knocked down?
Dude, let's talk about that because this is the same ref. You go back and you watch Benson Henderson versus Rafael Dos Anjos. This is the exact same ref. A lot of people call that an early stoppage against you know, Dos Anjos and Henderson, where Dos Anjos drops Benson and the ref doesn't let him recover. He stops the fight right away. Well, here with Mitrione got knocked out cold. And the ref wouldn't stop it. You know what I'm saying, guys? And, yeah, and then the other guy comes back somehow. Yeah. Mitrione lost that fight by knockout.
Yep, and I agree with you. When he went down and he was lights out, hands up in the air, like he was on a roller coaster, they probably should have called it, but they didn't want to.
What kind of money? Has it been disclosed how much money he's getting at Bellator now? Because that was the big gripe. Why I couldn't wear his shoes to that press conference because they weren't a Reebok, whatever the hell it was. Do we know how much he's making? Because that was... He thought that he could make more on like sponsorship and advertising.
I don't know if they've come out with the disclosed salaries yet. They may have, but I haven't checked this morning. Usually I get
I've never
Reddit
seen those posted
thing.
For Bellator. Do they not have to for some reason?
I think they do, just no one cares.
I care.
You know, it's funny, guys, because with one of the guys that left the UFC recently because he tried to act like he was going to get more money in Bellator, his disclosed was 10 and 10. Yeah. And in the UFC, he was getting like 100 or something. And I think... I could be wrong, but I think it was Josh Thompson. So I don't know if the grass is necessarily greener on the other side.
But that was that with his Strikeforce contract? I mean, because Josh Thompson was – he came into the UFC when they purchased Strikeforce. So did they just grandfather in his Strikeforce contract? And that why it was so bad?
No, I mean like – I'm saying he was getting six figs in the UFC, and then when he went to Bellator, he was getting 10 and 10. So I was like, bro, I thought the grass was greener on the other side.
I misunderstood. I thought he was making $100 a fight, and I was like, wow.
No.
I must have heard that incorrectly. But at the same time, his contract was up. I don't think the UFC was going to sign him again. I think Benson Henderson was the only one whose contract was up who might have actually stayed in the UFC. But, who was it? KJ Nunes, Josh Thompson, some of the other guys that have just come over, Matt Mitrione, their contracts were all up. Matt Mitrione would have probably got signed back into the UFC, but other than that, those guys had to go anywhere they could because the UFC was done with them.
And rightfully so again.
But Josh Thompson should be fighting Michael Chandler. I mean, that was a solid fight.
Now we get Benson versus Chandler, I assume. And, you know, I'm going to call it right here, right now on your show. This time next year, Rory versus Benson in Bellator.
You think?
Wow.
I do.
You think Rory's too big for Benson, though?
It's 170.
He's too big for him. I mean, you saw Benson versus Koroshkov, but Benson doesn't care about if the guy's too big for him. You know, he's too tough for his own good. He'll go up there. He'll fight any challenge.
He fought Thatch, too. He fought Thatch.
But Thatch looked gigantic. But
That's
that was
what I'm
just
saying.
Technique. And that was Conor McGregor's whole thing.
Benson's good enough fighter. I think he can close distance. I still think he loses that fight, to be clear.
If he can learn karate, I think he does fine.
Oh, God. Karate's done. That's the last fight a karate guy wins.
He picked McDonald. I picked Thompson. So he's still bitter about it. I also picked Bisping, and he picked... And he picked wrong.
I pick wrong every time. So when the betting segment comes, I'm just going to talk about I'm going to think hypothetically how little of money I would put on the fight that I'm picking because I'm always wrong. It's like, yeah, what's the minimum? I'll do that.
Yeah.
Hey, so if you're always wrong, why don't you just bet the opposite of what you initially
picked? I've done that, and I was wrong. I don't know what to go with that. Like
complete opposite of you, and we'll be 100%.
Yeah, like let me pick, and then everybody else go opposite. That's the way it needs to happen.
So one of the other things that, Daniel, I don't know if you actually ended up seeing the really controversial fight where the guy was in the, a rear naked choke for an extended period of time. Did you end up seeing that fight with the rear naked choke?
Which show are you talking about?
I believe it might not have been Bellator. It might have been Titan FC. There's a rear naked choke.
My boy Mike Biggie Rose choked some dudes out with an incredible choke. Like it was like a rear naked grip, but it was like from a darce position. I was like, damn, son.
Which card was that on?
It was on Victory FC. It was on Fight Pass, actually. Fight Pass. I think it was the same night as Bellator.
Yeah. No, it was the 24th, I believe. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, no. So the question I have is there's a clip going around the internet, and I thought it was on Bellator, but I may be incorrect. There was a ref stoppage way after the two fighters get in there. The dominant fighter gets the other fighter in a rear naked choke, and he holds it, I'd say, about 45 seconds, maybe even a little bit longer before the ref actually steps in. So he has him, arms are limp, the guy's just laying there, and... The rear naked choke is on still
for 45 seconds.
It's a really long time.
He'd be dead.
Yeah,
or brain dead.
That's the point. Everyone's like, so you remember the Uriah Faber fight where he had him?
Yeah, he had him up against the cage.
Yeah, Mizugaki, right? Mm-hmm. Now, who did he have?
Mm.
Matsui. Anyway, he had the Asian fighter up against the cage, and he was turned around, and so he couldn't tap. His arms were stuck, and Uriah Faber actually
and the ref couldn't see either because he was up against the fence.
So the ref, so Uriah Faber actually turned around and be like, "Hey, he's out." Well, in this situation, the fighter just continued to hold the rear naked choke, and it was just, it was brutal. It was the longest rear naked choke hold I'd ever seen when the fighter was, like, easily unconscious. I mean, if you can watch it on TV and be like, that guy's unconscious, then the ref
was it worse than the Mark Munoz, Chris Weidman finish when he just kept punching him for, like, 15 times?
Yeah, maybe not as bad.
Dude, how about Mark Munoz versus Ron Carnero? I mean, that one was... That's like the same kind of thing that you're talking about, where it was a rear naked choke, and you know the dude's out cold, but the ref won't stop it. I mean, this ref, I think his name is Jaron Vallel. He's terrible, man. I mean, he refed that fight with Valerie Letourneau, where she quit multiple times in the fight.
The last fight that she had.
When a fighter turns their back to their opponent, that means the fight's over. And I'm not saying like turtling up, turning your back. I mean, turning your back like and running away, and saying, "Hey, I'm done." That means the fight's over. And you know these refs nowadays, they're really not looking out for the fighter safety, which is kind of bullshit, man. So I think they need to pay more attention. And yeah, whatever ref that was that you're talking about with that rear naked choke, man, he should never be reffing a fight ever again.
No. Absolutely not. Well, so let's talk about fine lines here. So John Jones said that he didn't actually want Big John McCarthy to ref their match. Big John McCarthy, everyone's making fun of John Jones because they're saying the only reason that he doesn't want McCarthy to ref this match is because McCarthy's the only one that actually gets mad at him for his eye pokes. Which he gets, what, one or two per fight. And so...
That's the other person running into his outstretched hand. How dare you?
Yeah. My fingers were there, and he stepped into them. That's perfectly fine. So it's interesting because you've got problems with Herb Dean. You've got problems with John McCarthy. You've got problems with Yamasaki. I mean, everybody's got some kind of issue with one of these refs, like Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar hates Mario Yamasaki because he thinks he'd stopped his fights too soon or whatever his issues were. These poor refs, man, and I understand, like, it's your one job. And if I had one job that traveled me around the world and paid me enough money to live to just go in and watch UFC fights and referee them, I would probably try and be the best at my job as humanly possible. And so it's really difficult to watch these refs. When they do something right, everyone's like, oh, man, you did something right. And then when they do something wrong, they're like, these refs every damn time. Like Neil Magny, Hector Lombard, right? They could have easily called that fight, and they didn't, and everyone was like, great on the ref for not calling the fight. He did a good job, and if you ask me...
Fuck no, dude. Listen, I bet on Neil Magny in that fight as an underdog, and that fight should have been stopped way before. I mean, Hector took an unnecessary amount of punishment, and then you saw in his fight with Dan Hendo. You know, every time you get knocked out, it gets that much easier to get knocked out again. So he goes out there against Hendo. He's a minus 450 favorite. Everyone thinks he's going to smoke Hendo, and then he's the one that gets smoked. So, yeah, these refs need to, you know... They need to chill out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. No, I can agree.
No, yeah, 100%. Like, I think you always have to err on the side of stopping it early. I mean, we all want to see the good comeback, but, like, the reality in combat sports is you're playing, like, a very dangerous game, and it only gets worse down the line. Like, the Chet Congo, Pat Barry. Pat Barry has he fought since that fight? It was, like, once or twice, and I don't even
know. Yeah, he fought since then, and he got brutally knocked out subsequent times.
Yeah, and he's done now, right? Like, he doesn't even fight anymore at all. Like, he's not even lower promotion or anything.
He quit sports and went to kickboxing, and he got knocked out there, too.
Damn it, dude. Damn it.
Knocked out everywhere. That was my cousin. So my cousin fights locally. He fought on Bellator, Jordan Smith, and he started getting knocked out, and it was done. As he started to get knocked out more and more, I mean, we're talking like 45 seconds, like just these flash KOs. He actually is the one that got knocked out by Brad Tavares to get Tavares into the Tough House way back in the day. And that started it. And from then on out, he would get caught and he would get flash KO'd. And the hardest part is these fighters have such great muscle memory that they can get knocked out, defend themselves intelligently because that's what their body's used to, and then until their brain actually kicks back in. And we had a discussion about this, about 4 weeks ago? Of is it really that much safer than boxing if these flash KOs are happening? They're not calling the fights. These fighters can get back up and then continue to fight because that's basically what they're getting without a standing eight count or without, you know, a 10 count.
I still think it's safer than boxing.
Than boxing for sure, 100%. Sorry to interrupt you, brother, but no, I mean, like, for example, you talk about, you know, getting knocked out like your boy. Okay, so if your boy got knocked out in MMA, That's it. Stop the fight. Yep. If he got knocked out in boxing, they're about to give him that count, and then he's going to go back in there and get knocked out again. So he's going to take multiple concussions. I mean, 12 rounds of hitting someone in the head, that's not healthy, or a body too, but still, you know, in MMA, there's so many more avenues to win a fight. It's safer 100%. There's never been a death in this sport. There's been many deaths in boxing. MMA is safer.
Well, you forget Ireland. That poor guy died.
True. That is very true. But I'm talking about the highest level here.
Yeah.
Well, and sanctioned. Like, there's been a lot of, like, unsanctioned fights. Like, that's the whole point of it needed to be.
Punched the guy's eye out.
Who did?
Not Dada, sorry.
Kimbo?
Kimbo punched the guy's eye out.
Dude, and I don't really want to talk about this. It's y'all's show, but imagine if Kimbo would have fought recently, considering, you know, a rest in peace and all that. But imagine if they would have put him in there. What could have happened? Yeah. It could have gotten real fucking bad.
Well, yeah. In retrospect, the him and Dada thing is terrifying. And like right after, Justin was like, well, should that have really happened? I was like, yeah, why the hell not? Like, let him get paid. But now looking back, it's like, no, I'm 100% wrong. It's
that. Well, because
it's scary.
What you believe is an adult, right? Two grown ass adults going in there to get their paycheck. They're going through medicals. They're cleared. They should be able to fight. There shouldn't be any issue. As much as we don't want to watch it, or we want to complain as MMA fans that it's not real MMA, it's a spectacle, whatever. It's two adults going in there and providing for their family. However, when the medicals aren't there and the commission's not there to actually check these things out, yeah, it's a big issue where both of these guys could have died. I mean, you look at it, though. Dan Hardy has his heart issues. Stefan Struve had heart issues. And they didn't catch him until, you know, 5-6 fights into their career. So a lot of – you wonder what's happening that these guys can get cleared. And way back in the day, they just used to lie. You know, do you have any injuries? No. And they would be going in with a torn MCL or ACL or some kind of other issue, and they just wouldn't say anything about it. Got to get paid. When you're making two to show, two to win, like Chael Sonnen was talking about on his show, that's brutal. Mm-hmm. He said he walked away with $100. But he's talking to Front Row Brian. And the more I listen to Front Row Brian, the less I like him.
I love Front Row Brian. I listen to that guy all the time. I follow him on Twitter. I love that guy.
I love Chael's podcast. It's so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the. There's very few MMA ones that I listen to. Most of the guys that have befriended us as we've gotten started, I try and follow theirs, Fight Picks, all of that. And then Chael, and then the MMA Hour. And I just listen to that at work on Monday. And so there's just so few that are really, really good. And Chael's, I got really political this week, which I was like, that's good, but eh. But no, so let's move on from there. Michael Chandler is now the champion because Will Brooks is now moving into the UFC, which is crazy because he said that, once again, talking contracts, when he was on with Ariel Helwani, he actually said that he might be making less with the UFC, but he'd rather be fighting the talent in the UFC than in Bellator. And so Bellator cut him loose. And so he'll be fighting. Do you know who is he fighting offhand? Do you know, Daniel?
Ill Will's fighting Ross Pearson.
That's what it is, Ross Pearson. What do you think about that fight?
I think it's a good fight. I think a lot of people are counting out Ross Pearson just because, you know, Will Brooks is 17-1 or whatever his record is. But the reality is, this is the big show, and a lot of guys that go on to do great things, they lose their UFC debut. I mean, look, Anthony Showtime Pettis, Max Holloway. I mean, Hector Lombard, the list goes on, even though Lombard didn't go on to do great things. You know, Max Holloway and Showtime Pettis did. So, you know, is Will Brooks going to win this fight? I don't know. He should. He's going to be a big favorite. But, you know, those octagon jitters are no joke. Ross Pearson's experience, he's been in there with everyone. So you can't count him out at all here.
Well, going in knowing that you're supposed to win, that puts all the pressure on you. And you hear that all the time, like Biz being said or whatever. You know, I'm going in there and I'm supposed to lose. That means there's no pressure on me. Win or lose, I come out just like I did going into the fight. But if I win, it's much better. And so Will Brooks, yeah, for those hardcore, well, maybe not even hardcore. Those people, I don't think, Carson, you're not familiar with who Will Brooks is, right?
I haven't watched a lot of his fights now.
So Will Brooks was the champion in Bellator who just vacated his belt to come to the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
So he came over. He'll be fighting Ross Pearson, as Daniel just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting because a lot of people say that he needs a steeper jump in competition right off the bat to prove that he needs to, you know, he should be in the UFC. He was the champion. Ross Pearson, I really like as a person. I've always been very underwhelmed with him as a fighter. When he fought Evan Dunham, and right, this is almost 2 years ago, and everyone was like, oh, Ross Pearson's going to run through Evan Dunham. I was like, have you guys forgotten MMA completely? Like, Evan Dunham's a tough dude, And all he's going to do is take Russ Pearson down and just make sure that he negates any of his striking for three rounds. And that's exactly what happened. And so it was one of those things where I wish it wouldn't have happened like that. It would have been great to see Russ Pearson be able to stand and strike. But he's a British fighter. If you're a Brit and you're fighting an American whose wrestling's better than yours, you're going to be on your back the entire fight. Paul Daly, Josh Koscheck, Russ Pearson, Dan Hardy, GSP, who's North American. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just what's going to happen. The other fight that I'm excited for, speaking of your podcast, Half the Battle, Bilal Muhammad's coming in. He's a good interview. I watched him. He was in Victory FC, right? He was a champion over there.
Titan FC,
that's what it is. I always forget. Steven Seiler, a buddy, a friend of a friend of ours, who's from here, is also in Titan FC. He just lost his. But when they're on Fight Pass like that and I watch them the same weekend, I always forget which one's Victory and which one's Titan.
Hold on. Wait a minute. I have a question.
What?
Did either of you guys get to watch The Ultimate Fighter? The stupid soccer game went long, and it didn't record anywhere. Did they cancel it this week?
Nah, Eric Spicely got knocked out by Eldirte Sanchez, which is crazy because, you know, I picked Spicely to win the entire show, and then he gets knocked out. But now Spicely's fighting Sam Alvey, believe, in a couple months.
Why is he fighting? That's an interesting jumping.
No, who came back in, not who won.
He said Sanchez was the other one to fight. He beat Spicely. Oh, who
came back in?
Who was the alternate?
No idea.
I was wondering if... Anyways, I'm sorry to cut everybody off and lose... I couldn't find it anywhere, and I really wanted to watch this episode, and the stupid soccer game pissed me the hell off, and I thought that they just canceled it this week.
It's good to UFC Fight Pass.
We have one. I should just watch it.
They only have all the 8 episodes? They don't have all of them up now, right?
Well, he said he watched it.
Oh, it was on Fight Pass? Okay.
Yeah, they upload them like a couple days after they come out. So,
watching it when I go home.
And I watched the first 4 episodes. They didn't get on Fight Pass, and then they started loading them up one by one. And then they were like, "All 8 are up now." And I was like, "No, you've lost me, Fight Pass. I'm not gonna do it now. Not gonna do it. You should have just loaded them up right after." So anyway, back to Bilal Muhammad, fighting Alan Joban. I like Joban a lot, but Muhammad's looked really good in Titan FC. I saw his last 2 fights actually kind of on a fluke because they're on Fight Pass. I was just watching him, but he looked really good. I'm excited to see him in the UFC. How do you feel about him fighting Joban?
Well, obviously, I mean, Joban's no slouch. Joban comes to fight. He's experienced. And the thing I love about a guy like Alan Joban is, you know, everyone makes fun of him because he's a model, which I don't know why you'd make fun of him for that. But the dude comes to fight every single time. I mean, even when he loses fights, it's exciting. I mean, he went out there with Albert Tumenov, and he tried to fight Albert Tumenov. He didn't try to, you know, hump him or push him up against the fence or this or that. He tried to go out there and fight him. That's why we love a guy like Alan Joban. But Bilal Muhammad, he's one of the brightest prospects in MMA. He's coming into the UFC. He got signed for a good reason. It's going to be interesting, man. I mean, he's coming off that Ramadan fast, so I don't know how his nutrition's going. And also, you know, obviously the UFC jitters that we mentioned when we talk about Will Brooks. So, you know, that UFC debut is no joke. If someone's a big underdog here, I will bet them. But, you know, it's a tough fight to call.
So, Joban...
I was going to say, the whole Joban thing, the whole giving him shit because he's a model. It's the same thing with, like, Sexy Yama. It's like, they clearly care about more about fighting than they do modeling anyways. Like, they're putting their modeling career on the line every time they fight. They're going to end up like Vanderlei and, like, looking like him. But, I don't know. That's a stupid reason to count somebody out, but...
Just because a guy wants to cut his cauliflower ear and drain his ears and look like a fighter.
Pretty.
Dude, I'm going to take it one step further. People give Brian Caraway shit for dating, like, the hottest chick in MMA. I'm like, are you serious? Like, you're going to make fun of someone for having a hot girlfriend? Yeah. Like, that's the level we've stooped down to now?
Well, it's because he has everything that they want. Like, hot girlfriend, that she's successful. He's pretty successful, too. I mean, he hasn't won a belt yet, but he fights. You know?
That's the fight I called.
Yeah, shut up.
I called Caraway was going to win that. That's the third fight.
Anyway. There you go, buddy. There you go. That was sharp, man. Plus 350.
I got to start making bets.
Yeah, you do.
I got anyway, to. So I got to not. The last one that Caraway. I did was a parlay. It was stupid.
But Caraway, yeah, the hard
parlays part is, kill you.
The hard part with Caraway is he's one of those. He's a jobber, right? He goes in, he does his job, and he just, that's what he does. So you don't really see him much. When he's there, he's usually helping Misha Tate. And when he says something, he usually is just very to the point, which MMA fans don't really like. So they're like, what's up with this guy? Like, why does he seem like such a jerk? And it's like, no, he's not. Caraway's actually a really good dude. He just doesn't like to talk to the camera. He likes to go in, do his job, and be done. And so I've earned a lot of respect for him because of the Aljamain Sterling fight. However, I'm not the biggest fan of Caraway, only because it's based on his personality. But the fact is he's good. He's a great fighter. He helped Misha take.
But you just said he was a good guy, and you just said you didn't like his personality.
No, you can be a good guy, and I cannot like his personality. Just because you're buying me lunch doesn't mean I have to like you. You know?
Mm.
So he seems like a nice guy, but if him and I were to like, if he was dating my sister, and I had to like buddy buddy him, I think it would be a hard time.
You'd be fine. Stop. Let's talk about what's coming up.
That's because I'm the greatest guy that I know. Yeah, yeah. Nobody doesn't like me. Speaking of Alan Tuidov, I got to bring this up real quick. So remember how you said you'd bet your car on him against Gunnar Nelson? Yeah.
Telling Oliver everything that you were right about. Is that what we're doing right now? That's what this whole podcast, that's what you brought us all here for?
Yep.
We don't want to hear another thing about the bets that you've made. We want to hear about bets coming up.
No,
if it makes you feel better, I picked two men off there too. So we lost on that one together, my man. No, hey, Gunny looked better than he's ever looked in that one. I mean, he showed up. Like, he looked like a welterweight, first of all. Yeah. When we were all saying this dude needs to drop the lightweight, he finally looked like a welterweight. And, I mean, he went out there and he fought, like, to a level he's never competed at before. So props to him.
I think Gunnar Nelson's one of the most – well, that's the hard part. He's one of the most overrated, underrated fighters. And I mean that by those, the people that really watch the UFC are really high on him. Anyone from Europe loves Gunnar Nelson. They think he's the next great thing. People that don't know the UFC are like, who is this guy and why is everybody so high on him? And I'm definitely one of those. I like Gunnar Nelson and I like his technique and everything more than I like Conor McGregor's. And I know they train together and a lot of their technique's the same. But I think Gunnar Nelson is on a much higher level of MMA than Conor McGregor is.
Well, apparently not, because he's not holding the belt, but maybe his jiu-jitsu is.
Yeah, that's a very solid point. And like, well, and there's the argument where people say outside of 145, Conor McGregor is not going to win a belt.
I mean, hey, most people don't even win one belt to begin with, so that's a big accomplishment in itself.
I mean, I'm not going to talk. The thing is like, Conor. I'm not the hugest fan of Conor, but he could win a belt at 155. He's not holding it for very long, but pretty much anybody in that weight class could win it, like in the top 10, but pretty much nobody could hold it for more than two fights, I think.
Murderer's Row.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of 155.
Tell me about it.
All right, let's get into betting, and then we'll get into the RDA. And
I want to talk betting. Like, that's what I'm more into for this one, because Nace doesn't do fight betting at all. He hates it. And
so our good buddy the guy that places all the bets for anyone here that actually wants to place them, he won't bet on any kind of college sport, and he won't bet on fighting because of the puncher's chance, which makes a ton of sense. But he also doesn't.
Well, especially UFC, because there's so many different ways. Like, he just, even just the puncher's chance, just in general, he doesn't really understand it. His admission, he doesn't like watching it.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He doesn't know enough about the sport.
It's all about football and basketball for him.
And basketball, he knows a ton about more than anything. All right, so let's break this down. So let's say, what is the next card coming up where they actually have the odds out right now?
UFC 200.
All right, UFC 200. So let's get into, let's say, John Jones, Daniel Cormier. What are their numbers? Do you know?
Yeah, John Jones is a minus 320 favorite, and the comeback on DC is plus 260.
And so what does that break? What does that mean for those like us that are betting illiterate?
Okay, so basically what it means is anytime you have a minus number next to a fighter, that means they're the favorite. So John Jones is minus 320. What that means is you have to put down $320 to win 100 if he wins the fight, right? So for every 320 you put down, you win 100 if he wins. Now with DC, he's the underdog because there's a plus next to his number, and it's plus 260. So if you put down $100 and DC wins, you win $260. So that's pretty much the breakdown. You guys get it?
Yep, I've got it. You got any questions? So here's my question building off of that. Well, you got a question first?
I was just going to say, as far as like betting in general, what level do you recommend somebody that get into it? Like, should you have like a few years under your belt in MMA? Is it good for people that are just getting into it? It's kind of a nice way to segue into the sport and get you interested. Or I guess, how much knowledge do you need to have to actually bet on MMA? Do you really think you need that much? Or do you just need to be smarter at betting and reading numbers and things like that?
Knowledge or money? Which one do you need more?
You need everything, man, because look, if you don't know the sport, just like your buddy was talking about, you know, he starts bringing up shit like, oh, puncher's chance, that's why I don't bet, right? But the truth is he doesn't bet because he doesn't watch the sport, he doesn't get the sport, whereas I put in all the work, and, you know, when I make my picks, like, it's based on research, man, you know? So if you want to start making picks, look, if you're trying to make picks so that you can enjoy the sport a little more, that's a surefire recipe for disaster. You need to really you need to understand what you're doing. And you know, every single pick, I look at it like I read this book and they made an analogy. It's kind of like you're sending a soldier to battle and they're trying to bring back money for you, but if you're just throwing random guys out there, they're not going to come back alive, and that's an analogy for you losing your money. So you need to put out the soldiers that you're like, this guy is going to take care of business. And you need to go for underdogs, because if you start betting favorites, look, let's put it like this. You take two favorites, right? And you bet on one of them, and then you bet the other. One of them cashes, one of them loses. That's a losing night. But you bet on two underdogs, one of them cashes, one of them loses. That's a winning night. So it's all about the underdogs here. And, you know, you got to fade that hype. My suggestion is you pick between one and four underdogs per card. And just take it from there, man. And, you know, put the research in. Make sure you feel like you have an edge and you feel like, you know, people are counting this guy out. For example, Brian Caraway, he was plus 350 to, you know, to beat Aljamain Sterling. That means for every 100 you put down, you win 350. And Aljamain Sterling, he was a minus 450 favorite. So that means you had to put down $450 to win 100 on him, which is absolutely ludicrous. So, you know, obviously I put 100 on Brian Caraway, and he came through as the underdog, plus 350, because everyone counted him out, and I felt like he had the experience. Every fighter has to take that first L in their career. So just make sure you pick underdogs. Stay away from parlays. Stay away from big favorites. Oh. You know, that's a long-term way to lose.
Carson lost some money on a parlay.
I mean, I knew that you didn't put money on a parlay, but I just wanted to, and it was dumb. How often do you pick favorites? Does it have to pretty much be as close as possible to a pick'em for you to pick a favorite, or do you just not ever even touch them?
Adding on to that, actually, same kind of question. So picking a favorite plus 375, are there people that actually bet on favorites and have a system that they use to win money on that? Does that make sense?
Well, if it's plus 375, that's a big underdog. But yeah, a lot of people like to do parlays. Minus 375. Yeah, I'd recommend staying away from all that, dude, because like I said, long term, it doesn't pay. Because look, if you take three minus 375s and you put down 375 on each of them and only one of them wins, that's a fucking big losing night, dude. But let's say you get three plus 375s and you put 100 on each of them and only one of them wins, you just covered yourself. So, you know, it's all about the dogs here. You know, people love to bet the favorites, but don't do it, guys. And again, you know, it's one thing to pick someone and not put money on it. You know, UFC Fantasy or Toutmaster, DraftKings, whatever. Yeah, pick favorites there if you think they're going to win. But when it comes to your money, only bet dogs that you feel have a really good chance.
So do you spend most of your time in the undercard then?
It just depends, man. It all depends on the lines. You know what I mean? Like, for example, last week, Christoph Jocko was plus 200 against the Barncat McRory. And to me, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely betting that. And then, obviously, in the main event, Wonderboy, he opened as an underdog. And I was like, well, this dude's a future world champion. And Rory, just coming off this five-round war, Rory's talking free agency. Rory should not be a favorite here. I think Wonderboy is that good. So I took Wonderboy. And then the one I lost on was Leandro Silva. You know, he was an underdog. He lost a close split decision, which is totally fine with me because my other two dogs covered me and I had a winning night. Now let's say, so that's two for three, right? That's a winning night. Now let's say I bet on three big favorites straight and I won two for three. Chances are I'd have a losing night, guys. Yeah,
that makes sense. So the other question I had on that, so what changes the betting odds? So you said Rory McDonald opened as a underdog. Or sorry, not Rory McDonald. Stephen Thompson. I'm thinking about too many things right now. So Stephen Thompson opened as an underdog. Mm-hmm. At some point, that could actually switch, right? What would cause that switch to happen?
Great question, man. What happens is, so the odds makers, they set the line, right, where they think it should be. And then once the public comes in and they start spending their money, that's what adjusts the line. So if a bunch of money came in on Rory, you know, he actually shifted to the favorite. Actually, interestingly enough, it's funny how it worked. First, the money came in on Wonderboy, and he became, he went from the underdog to the favorite. And then on fight day, all the money came in on Rory, so it switched, like you were talking about. And then on fight day, Rory was the favorite, and Wonderboy was the underdog.
So that means literally people are going to their bookie or to the betting places, and they're putting in enough bets to actually switch that the bookies are saying, okay, we might need to make money back, so let's actually change these numbers a little bit. correct?
It's literally the money itself is what changes the number. It's really interesting. Once they get to a certain point and enough money has come in on a certain spot, you know, that's when the line starts to shift accordingly.
Very cool. And so one of the other things I asked you on Twitter that you explained to me very easily was units. So you have people like Izzy, right? The King, Izzy. The other day he was talking about plus 1.3 units, I think on Jodco actually as well. And I didn't understand that aspect because I thought it was the same thing. I thought it was, you know, plus or minus 150, but what it was is it was just units instead of, you know, hundreds of numbers. But I was incorrect. Mm-hmm. So explain what a unit is and kind of what that means.
Units basically a term for 1% of your bankroll. So I mean, if you got $100 and that's your entire bankroll, $1 would be 1%, which is one unit. So for me, you know, I like to do $100 units, which it's easier for people to follow. It's easy for me to track, and I can afford it, so it's fine. So you know, if I put down two units, that's $200 for me, 2% of my bankroll, right? So you know, when I say I won 1.5 units, it means I won $150. Now, for some people, the reason we call it in units is because not everyone has the same bankroll. Mm-hmm. So for someone that's got an $100,000 bankroll, you know, they're putting a little bit more per unit. Someone that's got an $100 bankroll, they're putting a little bit less. So the unit just lets people follow it, standardizes it, and it's pretty easy to track and follow.
So with that, do most people just keep it at units as well so people don't know how much they're betting? Or do you have the people that let people know exactly how much money they're actually putting down?
Well, I think it's because, you know, guys like me, I'm putting my bets publicly, you know what I mean? People are tailing me, so it's easier that way. But for a lot of these guys, you know, they don't give out their picks before the fact, so they might not actually be dealing in units. But for all the guys that, you know, they're like, hey, you need to follow my plays, you need to tail me, as they like to say, they usually talk in terms of units.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can easily, if you're already doing the math to figure out the betting odds and everything, you can easily just lock it into whatever your bankroll is and bet accordingly, and you're going to get the same results.
So do you have a subscription, like a subscription site for your bet picks, or are all yours free?
Oh, you mean like where people can tail my picks?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're free. They're always going to be free, guys. Go to best5picks.com and just, you know, get them there. I mean, I put them up there all the time and I have them tracked by a third party, and yeah, I mean, always going to be free because look, I feel bad enough when I lose on a free pick. I can only imagine what it's like charging, you know, for a losing pick. Even though I am a long-term winner, my picks have been tracked for, you know, like 2 years or so, been up those 2 years, but still, man, you have losing nights. That's part of this grind. You know, this is people that are trying to get in this game to get rich quick, surefire recipe for disaster, just like the parlays, just like, you know, betting big favorites. It doesn't work out. It's all about taking that road less traveled, finding little select underdogs, and that's what's going to win you guys money.
I wish you could have seen the parlay that I did.
I can only imagine, brother, because look, like,
it was the worst.
I've done my fair share of dumbass parlays too. You know, you live and you learn. You learn your craft as you go.
Dude, it was awful. Like the payout for like four fights that I picked, I think I didn't even make 100% back of what I even did on a four. It was like the $100 I put on, I would have won like 86 or something like that on a four fight parlay. It was the worst decision I've ever made.
That's not worth it, bro. And you know,
the thing is, I didn't know the number.
A lot of guys will do $100 parlay to win like 10,000. So they see that payout number and they're like, holy shit, like, you know, this five team parlay, all I need is for these five guys to cash, right? But it's, you know, it usually does not work most of the time long term. And this is a long term game, so you need to do what works.
Yeah, 100. The problem was I didn't even look at the lines. I was like, I have money to burn. I want to put some money down. And my cousin, I just sent him money. I was like, put it on these four fighters. And it was, and then he came back and he's like, this is how much you're going to get. And I was like, yo. And then stupid Travis Brown got knocked out and ruined the whole thing. Yep.
Andre exactly knocked him out. So prop bets, you ever make prop bets?
From time to time, man. You know, they have limits on them. They don't pay out as much as, you know, regular straight bets. I swear by the underdog, man. You gotta find the 1-4 underdogs per card. And I say 1-4 because you remember when Bader fought Rumble, you know, on that card I only had one pick. It was Carlos Diego Ferreira to beat Olivier Aubin Mercier. He was a +260 dog. I was like, yeah, I'm taking that. Now, that was my only play for that card because that's the only thing that stood out. That was the only value I found on that card. But then you got a card like last week and I had three plays. You know, I had Jocko, Leandro Silva, and Wonderboy Thompson. So it went 2-for-3 like I already mentioned. It's all about each card. You got to put in the research, put in the work, and once you see, like, wait, this guy's an underdog? Okay, I'm going to bet on him. That means people are counting him out. That means all the public is going on the opponent, and there's no strength in numbers when it comes to betting. So just because everyone loves a certain guy, listen, when everyone's overconfident and they're talking about how this guy's a lock, there's no such thing as a lock in the sport. But when people start talking like that, that's when you bet the other side. So when people are like, why is Bisping even getting a shot? You know, why? You know, he doesn't even deserve to be in there. Rockhold's going to smoke him. Rockhold's going to fucking kill him. Okay. When people start talking like that, that's when you bet Bisping. When people start saying, oh, Dan Hendo is old, he can't fight anymore, so Hector Lombard, it's a foregone conclusion that Hector's going to knock him out, that's when you bet on the underdog. People are completely counting them out.
How often do you wait for the lines to move, or do you place your bets right when they come out and then again possibly bet on if it moves in your favor? How often does that happen, or do you pretty much wait for day of? When do you actually place your bets, and how much do you actually watch the lines?
I watch the lines very, very closely. I watch them all the time. I rarely put bets in the day the lines come out because the limits are a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, sometimes if a line really stands out, you're like, dude, I mean, yeah, I got to play that before someone else hammers it. But for example, for some of the other plays, I'll wait till the day of the fight to do. So it just all depends, guys. You know what I mean? But you got to pay close attention to the line movement for sure.
So how do you prevent yourself from just picking your favorite? And I know, I mean, obviously it's different. It's a different mindset. But like, say football, right? The NFL. Say someone's a diehard Cowboys fan, whether they're the favorite or they're picked to lose, they bet on that person every single time. So, like, let's look at Connor versus Nate, where Connor was like a plus 430 or something. Like
minus 430.
And that's why I have to ask, because I always get him backwards. He's a minus 430. Like, how do you stop? Most people aren't going to bet on that. But how do you stop yourself from just being like, cool, my favorite fighter is the underdog. I'm going to pick this because I know who he is, and he's the underdog.
Well, if your favorite fighter is the underdog and he does have a good chance to win, he or she, okay, then yeah, take that shot. But if your favorite fighter is a, you know, a favorite, a big favorite, and he's got a really tough opponent, I would just completely pass from the favorites altogether, man. And, you know, it's funny, like you mentioned the football example of someone from Seattle was like, you know, I was like, why are you going to bet on the Seahawks? Oh, because I'm from Seattle. Surefire recipe for disaster. You know, you can't put your heart there. You know, I've learned this so many times. Like, I got a good friend, James Vick, that fights. Yeah. And, you know, he's 5-1 in the UFC. He's a winner, man. He's a great fighter. And, you know, he dropped his last fight to Benny, which is, Benny's no slouch. But here's the thing. Vick was a plus 170 dog. So I was like, okay, yeah, it's worth a shot on the dog there. But if Benny was, I mean, if Vick was a big favorite there, I would have passed.
Yeah. And that makes sense. And I guess that's the best way to look at it. And I've never really looked at it like that because I always figured, you parlay it. You take one favorite that you know is going to win, and you play it on one or two underdogs, and if you get all three of them, then you win big. But the chances of, if your that favorite loses, like Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz, you just lost the whole bunch of money. You just lost your entire payday based on losing that money and not making it up on the underdog. So it's an interesting way to do it. And I just wondered, because a lot of people will post their receipts and different things like that, and they will almost bet on every single fight. And in order to do that, you have to pick favorites and underdogs and try and even it out. And I watched one guy, I think he won $1,000 doing something like that. But the way that you do it makes a lot more sense to just be like, cool, I trust one or two people on this card that I think are major underdogs. But like you said, you've been doing this for years. And a lot of people look at these undercard names and they have no idea who they are. And they just have to more or less guess. And so it is one of those things that, if you're going to do it, make sure that you actually research anyone that you're going to bet on, and you have probably watched them fight, because you never know who won a split decision or who won a majority decision and should have lost, you know, and different things like that, that you might end up losing a whole bunch of money based on not knowing the facts or going off of solely numbers and not actual fight technique or anything like that.
Like, yeah, and absolutely, man. Yeah. And you mentioned the fact that you saw that one dude hit that, you know, 5-team parlay. He won $1,000 that one night, right? Wow. So he probably thinks to himself, wow, I should just do a parlay every single card. You know, once again, you might hit a parlay here and there. You might, you know, win a little bit, you know, once every month or whatever. But the thing is, this is a long-term game. And the parlays aren't going to hit long-term, man. It just doesn't work like that.
Do you only bet MMA?
Yeah, I only bet MMA, and I try to really only bet the UFC, too, because you see, for example, we were talking about Bellator earlier. There's so much bullshit with these other leagues. You know, Mitrione gets KO'd, but the ref doesn't stop it. Rampage loses 29-28, but he wins a 30-27. So I try to stay away from the smaller leagues unless I, you know, get the chance to fade, which means bet against a guy like Melvin Gillard, who I know doesn't train, who I know will tap out as soon as a even remotely locked in rear naked choke is in. I'll bet against a guy like that if he's a big favorite, but mostly I try to only stick with the UFC.
All right, so just to wrap this up real quick, anything else you want to add about betting? Any other questions you got, Cars?
I think
that covers it.
No, I think that's it.
Where do you bet?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's different for every state, but there's websites everywhere, and you guys don't need me to find one of them. Just, you know, look up, once I start getting sponsored by one of them, then I'll start plugging a book, but you'll definitely find some books if you Google them for sure. It's super easy.
So like Chael Sonnen pushing Bet DSI?
Oh yeah, he's getting paid to do that, which is cool, man. I'm happy for the guy. You know, I love Chael and Bet DSI. They got some good things going on, so maybe check them out.
I always wonder, because I know like Bet360, when I lived out in Europe for a little while, and that was a big one. But like, I honestly don't know. I went on Bet DSI the other day just to see if they would allow it in Utah, because I was wondering if I would get on there, try and place a bet, and they would be like, "Sorry, your country code doesn't actually allow you to do this." I just wanted to see, because I was going to bet on Bisbing because I knew he was going to win.
But you knew.
I didn't place that bet, okay. So I didn't know he was going to win. If it was a lock, I would have put some money on it.
All right.
Yeah, there are no locks.
That's my other question, because I'm not sure. And I obviously, all the laws are different. We don't have any Indian casinos down here we can walk into. We got to drive an hour away to do it. And I have to check on the online betting laws here in Utah. Because I have a feeling that if I were to get through with Bet DSI, they would tell me that I couldn't. Or maybe I can't cash the checks, the gambling checks or whatever it is. I'm not sure exactly how it works.
Send money to Todd. He'll hook you up.
That's true. He's in Dallas. So, but how does that work? So when you go to the bank with this check from a betting company, do they even care? Do they bat an eye, or is it pretty?
Yeah, it's funny you ask, man. You know, I usually do it in cash, but that's, you know, then again, I do it with a local guy, like you guys were talking about. So I'd recommend sticking to cash.
Yep, and that makes sense. There's one guy that I know that does. He's actually a professional bettor, and because it's legal where he's at, he'll get the checks from the company that he turns in. And in certain states, it's actually illegal, and so they can actually withhold your checks, or the FBI can take it or something like that. Like, before you bet, I guess the whole purpose of this is to make sure that you know what you're doing, or do it in cash. Make sure you don't deposit more than $10,000 at a time. You know, all of the FBI regulation stuff. So let's, with the last, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, let's get some picks. Let's actually just go, because I know you're going to be talking some of the main cards on yours, and I believe that both of us are actually going to try and get on your podcast if Carson is available.
What day?
Well, we'll talk about it after this.
We got to plug it right now. We got to let people know.
Well, we're going to plug it at the end. So we're
well,
just
basically, the fans need to understand that half the battle always comes out on fight week. So, you know, that's what it is.
Fight week. And ours always comes out after on Sunday, right after the fight card. That way we can review it. So listen to you, make some money, and then listen to us about...
Hear about how I lost it.
Hear about why my picks are better than Carson's. All right, so RDA versus Eddie Alvarez. What do you think? How does that fight go down?
Well, from a betting perspective, I'd recommend passing because you got to pay way too much for Rafael. And Eddie, you know, he's a live underdog, and live means that he has a chance. But the thing is, I just don't think he's going to win this fight. I think Rafael's better than him everywhere. If Eddie was plus 450, okay, yeah, maybe I'd consider a shot. But right now it's plus 345. I don't think there's enough value on it. I think Rafael Dos Anjos is going to be too much for him. I mean, his forward pressure, his switch kick to the body is just nasty. And if you go and rewatch Pettis versus Eddie, it was a close decision. Yeah. I mean, it could have gone either way, man. And I just think Rafael's on a different level. Obviously, no one's invincible in the sport. Everyone's going to lose eventually. And he'll lose one of these days, but I think he's going to finish Eddie Alvarez.
I'm not that impressed with RDA, and I say this every time, and I end up looking at his record and realize how stupid that sounds when I say it, but I remember the RDA, the losing RDA from the beginning of his career where he just was not doing very well, and for some random reason, I can't get that stigma out of my head, and so I think he wins this fight against Eddie Alvarez, but Eddie Alvarez could be a bad matchup. I mean, Khabib just held him down. We just saw that Eddie Alvarez just held down Pettis for, you know, 2.5 rounds, their last fight. So there's a – if Eddie Alvarez can get RDA on his back, he could smother him for 5 rounds. and he could end up scratching out a decision. I don't think he does that. I think RDA's ground skills are good enough to get him off his back.
It's probably the Brazilian with the best wrestling, yeah?
Yeah, like, and I'll even go as far as saying that RDA will finish Khabib in a rematch if they ever fight again.
We might have to do a gentleman's bet on that one, because
let's do it.
I think if Khabib gets enough time back in the octagon, I think he wins that. I think if they were to have gone right back into a fight, or he would have, you know, one fight after they would have fought, I think RDA has time in and all of that, and I think he wins. But I think Khabib is going to be a champion in that division, and he might. I don't think he's going to beat RDA. I think RDA is going to lose the belt before that. I out of all of the champions right now, other than Bisping, I think RDA is one of the most prone to actually.
Khabib is his next fight, though, after
is
Alvarez, don't you
Khabib
think?
Not taking another fight before that. I know he's got Ramadan.
Well, I would assume he would take a fight, and then they would probably fight. Then they would probably be the next one, right? I don't know. We'll
don't
see.
Forget about Tony Ferguson and Michael Chiesa.
Oh,
poor Chiesa, man. Oh. I love him to death. He's one of my favorite fighters, and I don't like Tony Ferguson.
I love Ferguson.
I mean, as a fighter, I think he's great. His personality, just like the Caraway, he's the opposite. It is a little irritating.
You don't know him.
I don't.
Oh my gosh,
he knocked
so
out
awesome.
Our boy Ramsey, though.
So awesome.
All the Utah fighters. We only have so many, so we have to jump on board with him. All right, so we got that one. Roy Nelson, Derek Lewis. What do you think?
I got Derek Lewis because, look, if they met a couple years back, I'd pick Roy Nelson. But if you watch Nelson's last couple fights, I mean, look, this is a guy that's always, you know, his gimmick or whatever has been the fact that, you know, he's a fat guy, but he can throw bombs, right? Well, if you watch his last fight, which was contested on the feet all three rounds, might I add, he looked so slow, so old. He was throwing everything he had at Jared Rochal, and he was just swinging at air, man. And I think Derek Lewis has been improving. You know, he's gotten into bad spots in his last few fights, and he's worked his way out of them. And I think in this fight, he's going to rise to the occasion, and he'll win as the underdog.
Rochal has some of the best feet in MMA, though. Walked him right out of the UFC.
Are you picking him as the underdog, or like just as like a fan, or both? You think he's going to win, and he's the underdog, and so that's why you're picking him? Or is this more just like he's the underdog, and he's enough of an underdog, I'm going to take him, and I think he's got a shot? Or do you actually like legitimately think, regardless of betting, that Lewis is going to win?
Both, man. I mean, gotcha. I think that Lewis should be the favorite here. If he was the favorite, I would pass because I don't think that Roy Nelson's going to win the fight. Mm-hmm. And like I said, man, Nelson's way too slow now. I mean, he's gotten to that point where he's huffing and puffing after mm-hmm. 2 minutes. He's swinging at air. And his biggest advantage has always been, you know, people like to talk about his ground game, which he never uses in the UFC, but it's really the overhand right, the left hook, the uppercut. He swings at air too much, man. Derek went down from Matt Mitrione, but that was a couple years back. He's gotten better since then. And since that time, Roy Nelson has declined. So, yeah, I got the underdog here for sure.
Gotcha.
Well, Matt Mitrione's the guy that anytime you think he's going to lose, he ends up knocking the guy out. And anytime you're like, well, other than top 10, if you're not in the top 10, Matt Mitrione's got your number. If you're in the top 10, Matt Mitrione's got no chance. I mean, that's kind of how I've come to determine his career in a very simplified way. So are you... Are you placing any bets on the Thursday card?
Yeah. Well, right now there's only odds on the main event and the Derek Lewis fight. So right now I only got something on the Derek Lewis fight. But, you know, we'll see where the lines fall. You know, if there's some underdogs that are being counted out that people aren't paying attention to, that they should be paying attention to, I'll definitely take advantage of that.
Do you feel like the MMA odds makers are good at, like they have a good idea of what they're doing? Or do you feel like, more than any other sport, they seem to just be like swayed by names or swayed by favorites. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean, and it's a little bit of both. I mean, they're definitely swayed by the names and stuff like that. I don't think they put in as much research as, I don't want to say someone like myself, but I truly believe, like, look, it's us against the books, man. So, you know, you're trying to find any edge possible, and absolutely, I'll definitely be capitalizing on their mistakes when they count guys out, like Christoph Jocko, who's plus 200 last week, and he knocks the guy out in under a minute. So, yeah, they definitely sleep on some guys for sure.
Do we know where they get their odds from? I mean, obviously, there's, like, scientific methods mm-hmm. that they're using to pull this information, but do you know more or less how they actually get their odds?
I mean, they do it based on how they think the fight's going to go down and based on how they think the money is going to come in. Like, for example, the Jones and Cormier fight could be closer on paper, but they think everyone's going to come in on Jones, so they set him as a really high favorite. And I mean, rightfully so. He should be a very big favorite here. But, you know, for me, as someone who doesn't play favorites anymore, I got to pass because I don't think there's enough value in DC to take that shot.
Anymore? Did you get burned?
No, not at all, man. I think Jones is going to win the fight.
No, he just needs a face.
You said, I don't bet favorites anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you got to learn your lessons, yeah, bro. You learn your craft as you go.
That's exactly right. And that's one of my hardest things with betting and putting a bet down is I go more with my heart still than with my head, which is, like you said, the number one way to lose money is to go with your heart instead of your head. So it's one of those things. But once again, tell people where they can listen to you, where they can find your show, and we'll close out with that.
Oh, is that all the picks y'all want? No, but check me out.
We don't want to take away from you. We want to push people to you to get your picks there.
Oh, cool, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, definitely check me out at Best Fight Picks on Twitter, bestfightpicks.com, and my podcast, Half the Battle, is on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube.
Best Fight Picks is always a great conversation on Twitter. Tweet at him, talk to him, make fun of him for picking his picks. He'll tell you why you're wrong. No matter what, he usually is a good conversation, responds back. One of probably the 5 or 6 Twitter accounts that we always talk to on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, go give him a listen. Go get his picks. Listen to his episodes because he's doing a whole different thing than we are. We're giving reviews where he's trying to make you money. So, Daniel, it's a pleasure. Thank you for sitting down with us.
Thanks for taking the time, man. We really do appreciate it.
Appreciate it. And we got it filming. So this will be live on iTunes and all of that, but I'll push it to you so that way you can go check it out. And we also got your face here on the Jumbotron, which you can't see, but you'll be able to see it when we load it to YouTube.
Hey guys, thanks so much for having me on the show. It's an absolute pleasure. I'll do it anytime. I look forward to having both of you on my show. We're going to talk, I believe, the Joanna versus Claudia card. I cannot wait. And again, guys, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Perfect. Absolutely. So I'm going to close this out. Stay on so we can discuss your show, but that way we can stop recording and don't have to do it like that. Thanks again.
Cool.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Westbeat MMA. And we'll look forward to hearing from you guys on Twitter and next week. Thanks, guys. Bye.